Welcome to A Canadian Investing in the U.S., a podcast and YouTube channel focused on Canadians buying real estate with host Glenn Sutherland.
Welcome to a new episode of Canadian Investing in the U.S. with host Glenn Sutherland. This week, my guest is Elizabeth Kelly. Elizabeth, let's start by giving everybody a bit of a background to yourself.
Sure. I've been a real estate investor for almost 20 years. I am now a real estate coach, and I specialize in helping people find opportunities where they didn't see them before. So regardless of their investment model or what it is they're looking to accomplish in terms of cash flow and wealth building goals, I help them do a quick analysis of where they are, where they want to get to, and then we start connecting dots.
I love it. And also you help educate people too. Like was it last summer or the summer before? I'm not good with timelines. You did like that virtual webinar sort of thing, or virtual conference. Yes.
Yep. You were on in 2022. We had one in 2023, and we're already planning 2024, which is the last weekend of September.
Awesome. Right. Yeah. I remember I did it. I was sitting at the cottage trying to find a spot where I was like, actually could see me because the light was hitting me the wrong way.
I remember that.
Yeah. Anyways, interesting. Elizabeth, what we want to talk about this today is due diligence. And even we were just briefly chit-chatting about this before we even started, but there is a lot, how do we word this correctly? There's a lot of people not doing due diligence. We'll word it that way. They're not doing the proper due diligence and then getting burned. And it's one thing that you can always blame this on the other person, but part of this, what we were trying to do today is give you some tips to try to train you to do your own due diligence before you start, to try to save you from losing some money and just even seeing some red flags when you're doing specific investments, right? So where do we want to start? Want to talk lending? Because we were just briefly talking about that beforehand. Want to go start with that one?
Yep, that sounds good. Start there.
Okay, so let's talk about lending. So I don't know if we're going to go into lenders per se, but maybe we'll start with prom notes, right? So if someone was to go and, they're getting offered an opportunity to invest in some sort of real estate project, and they're investing through a prom note, what kind of risks could they see or be exposing themselves to?
I love that question, and we need to be asking it more. Should we assume that people understand what prom notes are, or would it be helpful?
We should probably declare that right off the start too. I'm terrible for that. Just jump in the gun.
All right. Do you want me to explain them quickly?
Go for it.
Okay. So at a high level, when we talk about private lending, there's generally two types of private lending you can do. And private lending means it's between, for example, Glenn as a person and myself as a person. There's no bank involved. In this scenario, let's assume Glenn is the borrower and I am the lender and I'm lending Glenn money. It might be from my home equity line of credit. It might be cash. It might be some form of registered savings. Glenn and I have a conversation. We write up an agreement. Now, here's where it splits. There is promissory note private lending, which basically is a piece of paper that Glenn and I both sign that I say, I've lent Glenn this money. Glenn says, I owe Elizabeth this money. And here's the repayment terms. But there's no security attached to it. It's kind of like a credit card. It's totally unsecured lending. The other form of private lending is secured lending. So this is where Glenn and I agree to an amount and the terms and conditions. And that agreement is registered on the title of a property. So there is security. Your loan is backed by a hard asset, and there is a prescribed way to go about getting your funds back in the event that your borrower, in this case, Glenn, doesn't pay you back. And I'm not saying Glenn doesn't do that, because Glenn does, but that sort of clarifies what private lending is. So the promissory note space right now has become increasingly problematic for a few different reasons. So one is there's a lot of talk right now, or there has been for the last few years, about OPM, getting into real estate with none of your own money. So, and then borrowing everything and not having any of your own funds at risk. The problem is when we are in a market like we've been in for the last 24-ish months, that if you have nothing in the game and the market goes down, then it's your investors who get burned. And if you don't have the financial resources to back up the money you've borrowed, for example, if you borrow $200,000 for this project, if you don't have $200,000 sitting in the bank or worth of equity in your personal residence or something else, then your investor loses their money and you lose your reputation.
Mm-hmm.
and potentially more if they end up suing you.
Yeah. I don't know if this is a third kind of private lending, or maybe it's a combination. It's not something I've done, so maybe I'm going to ask you the question. Maybe you can help put it in a box. But I know sometimes there's mortgage brokers that will take money and place it into projects for people. No?
So I don't like private lending, or sorry, I don't like prom notes at all. The only form of private lending that I am comfortable with myself and that I recommend and teach my clients to do is secured lending. Yes. Promissory notes, you get paid and people get allured. Oh, look, I can make 15%. I can make 18%. And a lot of the crisis we're seeing right now in the real estate investing space are people who have done promissory note lending and the borrowers can't repay the funds. In some cases, the money is gone. In other cases, it's tied up in projects, in equity, and they can't access the capital to pay back. But regardless, there is nothing to protect you. And that's why the interest rate is higher. So the way I look at private lending, because I do it myself, if I cannot make it through not getting that money back, I should not be doing it. If I've borrowed that money from a home equity line of credit and I am counting on the payments coming in every month in order to be able to pay my line of credit, I shouldn't be doing it. And I always want to be able to connect the dots. So in a scenario where you lend money to a mortgage broker into whatever, and they go and do whatever they want with the money, I can't connect those dots. I don't know where my money is. And I'm not physically tied to any property because I've just lent to, you know, a person or a fund or whatever it is. And I would much rather be able to say, Glenn, I'm lending you money. Show me the property. And then my lawyer comes in and secures my loan on title. And then I know if Glenn stops paying me, there's a prescribed route for me to follow. And I am percentage-wise more likely to be able to get my money back.
Yeah, because you actually own a percentage of that property, depending on what position you're in on the property as well.
Yeah, and you look at historically the people who have had issues with repayment, everything was great until it wasn't. And that's the whole thing about, you know, Ponzi schemes and some of these other things is everything looks great on the surface until it's not. And by the time you know it's not, it's too late.
That makes a lot of sense. So you kind of answered that. You answered that question already is, whenever someone's going to do promissory notes, you should be getting this secured so that you have something.
It should always be secured. And even if someone says, well, I have no equity in this project. Okay, great. Put up your house. Well, I don't want to put up my house. Like, okay, well, I don't want to give you my money. Like the person who has the money makes the rules. And the culture has kind of shifted. And I mean, I know you've been investing a long time too. So I came through 2008 and I saw what happened. I saw the people who thought they were standing on solid footing and it literally the ground crumbled underneath them. And then you see, you know, the changes that have been made. I mean, when I started investing, it was 5% down. Mm-hmm. Like going to 20% down was enormous. It had a tremendous impact on the kind of portfolios that investors could build. Now we've got, you know, all the stress tests and they're talking about maximum caps on what you could borrow and all kinds of other things. So you have to be prepared to be able to pivot. And if you're out there taking a ton of risks and you can't sustain that risk, then you're not in a position to be able to pivot.
Yeah. As an operator myself, a lot of operators, and I'm not speaking about myself, but I can understand their position. They're going to often want to go in down the path of not securing this because there is, you know, typically a lawyer or attorney or title company or somebody involved in order to secure this loan on the property. And a lot of times they want to skip that step because it can be an expensive step to I know you shrugged that one up. For people who are listening, you kind of shrugged that off. But there is a cost to it. That do you think that's the reason why? I guess it's probably not the reason why people are the operators are avoiding that step, right?
In my experience, you borrow promissory note, you borrow money under prom notes because you might not have the equity there to offer as the collateral. So you're really almost gambling on your ability to make the money to pay back the prom note. Whereas, so here's what I do. When I borrow money is I have a loan right now that's coming due with my lender, and I offer them two choices. And I say, I'll do a prom note because she's looking for higher interest. So I say, I'll do a prom note. It's going to cost me $3,000 to register on title. I've got tons of equity. I think the property's at like, I don't know, less than 50% loan to value. So it's a commercial property. I don't like risk. I don't like fluctuation. So I keep my loan to value a little bit lower. And so I said to her, I can offer you 10% secured, or I can offer you 13% unsecured. She can take her pick. I've factored in $3,000 for legals both ways. One way I'm paying it to the lawyer and giving her security, and one way I'm paying it to her and she's taking the risk. But I suspect a large part of the reason why people are not doing secured lending or is not as much secured lending is because they just don't have equity in properties. And that alone should be a red flag.
I like it. That makes a lot of sense. And you're talking about the lender. And should there be due diligence on the lender themselves as well?
Oh. Hello, everybody. Thanks for listening to the podcast. I just wanted to let you know that I've created a new coaching program. I believe the new coaching program has way more value than any of the programs that have even existed in the past. What we've done is pre-recorded all the lessons so that you can work through it at your own pace, which is pretty cool. And then we're going to meet up on a regular basis to answer the questions, do deal analysis, and actually spend our time together working on things instead of spending our time learning things. I think this will make a seamless transition to buying in the United States and will help you solve a lot of your problems. If this is of interest to you, go to glensutherland.com/coaching. I hope to help you guys invest in the United States, and I hope we provide as much value as possible. Back to the podcast.
100%. When I do private lending, I have four different things that I look at. I look at my borrower or my lender, whoever it is. I look at the investment opportunity, like what do the numbers say? I look at the market and I look at the deal and the property itself.
Yep.
So I need to be able to satisfy myself that all four of those things are in a good spot or in a good place. And quite frankly, you know, I'm a borrower too sometimes, and I want to work with lenders who know what they're doing. It makes me incredibly nervous if a lender comes in and goes, oh, I know you. You have a reputation. Okay, I'll lend you money. No, you don't understand what you're doing. This is not risk from a point of knowledge. This is like blind trust. And that should not be happening either.
No, you should be asking questions to, if you're, so there's both ways to look at this. If you're the operator, you should be doing due diligence on the people lending you the money. Mm-hmm. I honestly don't want anyone's last dollar. Honestly, I usually would like to, I don't like to get too personal, but I don't honestly don't want their home equity line of credit money. I prefer cash, like something that they have in cash. And people go, from your perspective, why does it matter? And you're like, because it's going to matter to them. Right. And yes. it will matter to them. Especially if I don't know, anything goes off, even timelines, anything. We haven't been down that path, but I just don't want to be that person taking that other one. And then if you're lending money to somebody else, what is their track record? And you know, a lot of it is, the biggest part that they have to lose, like you touched on already, is the reputation. And mm-hmm. if they don't have a reputation, or nobody even knows who they are, like, is that a concern? Because they have nothing to lose, really. If they don't pay you back, so this other person could scream at the top of the mountain, and it you know, what does it mean, right, to anybody else, right?
Yeah, exactly. And you have to do your due diligence. And I think, quite honestly, you know, I would consider you, Glenn, I would consider you an influencer in the real estate space. People know you, people recognize you, people trust you. That comes with a greater level of responsibility, because not just that you have a reputation, but that people trust you because of who you are believed to be. So it's kind of like a teacher, right? Where teachers are held to a higher standard than just like your average Joe out there doing whatever. I believe that as people who are kind of considered like the OGs in the real estate space, we have a greater responsibility to make sure that our lenders understand what they're signing up for. I'm like you. I don't want anybody's last dollar. I don't want anybody who's calling me every day because they're stressed out asking if everything's okay. I don't want to be the reason why people are not sleeping at night or why people are having health issues. And I want to make sure that if I borrow, $250,000 here and something goes sideways, I have a plan. If I can't pay them back on my plan A, which is to refinance or sell or whatever my plan A is, I better have a plan B, C, D, and E for how I'm going to make these people whole. Because quite frankly, my reputation is worth more to me than one private lend.
Oh yeah. And if even for myself, if you go, you're going to say invest with me and I say, oh, my plan B is I have this slush fund that I could, come out of to pay you. If you're the one who's going to invest with me and I've said something like that, could I get a, a statement for this account? Can you prove this exists? And I've also been invited to invest in other people's projects, and sometimes they don't give you enough information about the project. They're like, we are going to give you a super high interest rate. But I'm like, what am I investing in? What is it? Is it a specific address? Where is it? And honestly, I would want that on the very least. I want that on the paperwork. I'd like to have the note secured against that property. But sometimes literally you don't know when you're even going to get paid. Like it'll say an annualized return or it's paid at the end of the I've got offered to invest in these, and it is common. Like you, I have been offered it, and I don't offer those out to anyone else. If you invested with me, you're going to be, secured on the property, and you're going to know your interest rate, and you're going to know when what the payment schedule is, and it's going to be broken down. It'll be when the note is open, when the note is closed. What the difference is when it's closed. So off the typically the first 6 months, no matter what, I have to make you six mortgage payments or payments, note payments to you, even if I finish the project and I'm done, I still owe you at least six. You get a 6 month no matter what, even if I'm done early. And then the open, I could do like the next 6 months where I could pay you off in that time. There's a lot of times the way I structure mine, right? So if I finish something later and I explain that to them, right? But a lot of times people don't know what, like investing, like I'm literally thinking of a specific one it was offered to me about a month ago. And it was like, we'll offer you this high interest rate. And I was like, what is the what how much when do I get paid? And I get paid at the end of the term. And they're like, we only need the money for 5 months. And there was no, you get paid at the end of 5 months. You don't know if anything. There was just too much uncertainty to actually invest in that kind of project. And the problem is, if you're not investing in anything specific, you might be just bailing out somebody else's project. So there may now be borrowing at leverage of well over 100%. They might just keep borrowing, keep borrowing, keep borrowing. And it's not even project specific. You might be, financing their Ferrari. You don't know where your money is going, right? What you're investing in. And it's very scary that people do it because they look at the interest rates. I told you the story before we started. I had someone called me up and they said, I want to loan you money, Glenn. I want to do private money lending. And they said, what are you currently paying? I'm not going to say rates, but I told them the rates that I was paying for, whether it was in renovation. I have different rates depending on the risk, right? Because that's the way it should be. Depending if it was stabilized with tenants, depending if it was in renovation. And they said, well, I'm currently getting 17% and you're lower than that. So I don't know why I would ever invest with you. And I said, I don't know why you would either. If you have 17% secured, I would just do it. And they said, well, it's not secured and I haven't received a payment in a year. And I'm like, well, then you're not getting 17%.
You're getting zero. In fact, you're getting negative because your money's gone.
Yeah.
Like you have no claim to it. You have no way to access it at all. And it's interesting that you say that. There's a situation where things are in insolvency protection right now, but I started to see some issues and some red flags in 2022, and I knew some clients who had done some lending and had some money in projects. And I said to them, I think you need to pull out. I'm starting to see some red flags. I'm uncomfortable with the business practices, and I think you need to pull it out. So a number of my clients pulled their money out. In fact, well, I think all but one pulled their money out. And I had a call a couple of months ago from a former client, and he said, I think I'm in trouble. I don't think I can get my money back. And I go, what do you mean get your money back? You pulled it out in 2022. And he goes, yeah, he goes, but I really like the cash flow, so I gave it back.
Oh.
And I was like, it, you just You have to be, if you're going to do private lending, you have to know that the worst case scenario is that your money will not come back. And you have to be okay with that. And if you are not okay with that, then you shouldn't be doing that as an investment model. And I am not comfortable, quite frankly. I know there's a lot of people who believe in a lot of the big funds, you know. Again, we've had Paramount that went under, we've had Fortress that went under. If I can't see the business practices, if I can't look under the hood and take a look at what people are running and what people are doing, and you know, have you filed your taxes? Are the property taxes up? Like, if I don't know the answer to this, I'm not going to give anyone my money. I'm better off keeping my money and doing smaller deals myself than I am, or partnering with someone to do smaller deals, than I am giving my money to someone and having no idea where it's going or what's going on with it.
Yeah, this might be a different path, and I don't know if we want to go down this, but you just mentioned funds, and even if I was going to invest in a fund, I'd rather invest in a syndication. And the reason is with a fund, you're investing in the operator, and you're trusting that they're going to invest your money into across several projects, and it'll work out. And you're kind of the way they sell it is you're diversifying your risk by being in multiple projects at the same time. But at the same time, you don't know what you're specifically invested in. And if even, one or two of them go upside down, they didn't buy rate caps, which means that their interest rate is turned into a variable rate and it gone up. And because I went to a meeting of a whole bunch of syndicators in Toronto, and there was a lot of them that didn't buy rate caps, and they're like, we're in a lot of trouble. We're in a lot of trouble because of we didn't buy them. And you just don't want to be in this situation. You'd rather be focused on a project where they're this is the building we're buying, or the shopping mall, or whatever. This is the one building we're buying. This is how we're going to protect your interest, and this is why you want to invest here. And you know what exactly where your money is. You know that that's the building. You could drive by it. You could see it. You could feel it. At least for me, that feels a lot safer.
And real estate should not be get rich quick. It's not, you know, I'm investing in this and I'm retiring in 2 weeks. It should be slow and steady. And we just have this idea of, you know, I'm going to retire next week and I'm going to become a millionaire and I'm never going to have to work again. And it's almost like this dream that's been sold, but the reality of it is that so few people achieve that dream in that way. I mean, I've been investing 20 years and I still have side hustles because I want to be able to continue to roll money back into my portfolio. So when I'm ready to retire and I sell off properties, that they're worth considerably more than I've put into them. But you have to be prepared to do that due diligence. And you know, I offer strategic calls to investors. I can do 1 hour and I can look at a deal with you. And I have had people who have messaged me and said, "Hey, can you look at a deal with me?" I'm like, "Absolutely. I 1 hour strategy call, 5:49. Send me all the documents in advance. I'm going to look everything over and I'm going to sit down with you in that hour and I'm going to tell you the questions that you need to be asking. If you can't answer those questions, then you're going to go back and you're going to do your own due diligence." 5:49 is all it would cost to have a second set of eyes on a deal before you do it, before you potentially lend your money and it doesn't come back. And do you know how many people are like, "No, I'm just going to keep all my money so that I can do my next deal." Okay.
Okay, so okay, in that perspective, if you were going to be the property owner, would you get an appraisal done? Would you get a home inspection done to know that where your money is going is a safe spot? I think most people would say yes, I would go get that done. Sometimes, if you're borrowing money, it's not going to be an option. The bank is going to insist on an appraisal because they need to protect their interest. And a lot of times I like to think like a bank when I'm borrowing money, when I'm doing construction draws, the way I treat contractors, the way I do work, everything. If you model the bank, they are built to protect their own interest, right?
Yes, they're anti-risk.
Yeah. So if you think about that, that's what they would do, right? They would insist that these things were done in order to give you the money. So if you're going to be the bank and give people money, should you not be doing something of the similar? You might not actually, you won't be able to do an appraisal, but you could talk to somebody like Elizabeth and they could look through the documents and try to point out the risk, so that you understand where you're going. Because a lot of times the people who want the money are excited to tell you all the good stuff about the deal and might leave out some of the stuff that are the risky points. What cap rate they're buying at, what is the cap rate of that market? Maybe they're misdipping, or maybe they're buying right at what it's worth, which is the most common thing I see. And then they if anything changes, the slightest bit, which a lot of things are changing on a monthly basis right now, that they can be in a lot of trouble. Anyway, that's what I'm thinking. Just treat like yourself like a bank. Try to eliminate those, make it as predictable as possible. Make it boring.
And I think that other thing too, and you really touched on it well there, Glenn, is people get excited. You know, the borrowers are excited, the lenders are excited, everybody's all hepped up, and everybody's making decision with emotion. And real estate should be 100% numbers driven. So if you are not able to take that step back and look at things impartially and do the deal or not do the deal, then you need to get someone in there who can look at it impartially and say, do you fully understand these risks? And then if you understand where all the risk is coming from, I mean, the way I look at it, it doesn't matter how much money I'm borrowing from people. You only need to have a lawyer involved as an independent to provide independent legal advice for over 50,000. If you're borrowing or lending over 50,000, I have a lawyer involved regardless of the amount, because I want to know that my lenders fully understand any risk that they're taking. I don't want to be losing sleep at night as a borrower, knowing that people didn't understand what they were signing up for.
One thing I know I did, even myself, when I about 8 years ago, I can talk. About 8 years ago, I wanted to invest in a syndication. I wanted to do it partially to learn how it all worked, and I wanted, honestly, it was just a way to take my money that was, you know, just sitting there and put it to work, right? And it seemed like a way, you know, I wanted to see what a private placement memorandum did, and I wanted to do this myself in the future, but I thought the easiest way to do it was to, you know, not reinvent the wheel and copy somebody. So I'll just invest in their project and see all the paperwork. So I went through this, and what I did, which is not even the right way to do it, is I just like the operator, they had like three, four projects at the time, and you're like, this one pays this much, this one pays this much, and you don't even look at the whole rest of it. After a while, you get overwhelmed, because there's so many numbers and so many different things that are running. You know, the IRR, which is going to dictate, you know, what the monthly rate is, as well as what you're getting kicked out at the end, putting it all together. And you just start going, oh, I'm just going to pick the one with the highest number. I'm like, what is the highest number? But even like we were talking, it's risk. And usually the rate is related to a risk, right? Which, you know, depending on who you're talking to, the way they're going to word this is value add. They're going to be doing massive full eviction to do a full remodel of the building, which is a massive risk, right? Because there's nothing carrying through the whole thing. But those ones typically are going to have the highest returns. They'll be like, oh, actually, I'm going to say not because they numbers, but there'll be, you know, your IRR will be very high. Your cash on cash return will be very high. Well, it'll be nothing until you have tenants in there, because that's slow. But it will be nothing until the future, and it'll be really high. And sometimes there's other projects where there's no return to the investors until they've stabilized the property, which they in order to make their numbers work, there's not enough cash flow to pay you. Like, there's not a cash on cash return to pay the investors, and they're waiting until year two or wait year three, or till the refinance happens at that point. And those are red flags to risk, to show that this property doesn't make enough money until the future, and you're betting on A, B, C, and D to work out for this to work out. So just.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. And I think that's another reason to say, you know, don't invest in projects that you don't understand. If you've never done land development before and you don't understand what the process is and you don't understand where the risk can come from, then you should probably not be investing in land development projects, because you cannot properly analyze a deal and look at it and say, I know that there's risk here, I know that there's risk here, I know that there's risk here. Even the model that you just gave, Glenn, if you can't evict the tenants, if you end up with one of those buildings with, you know, a tenant activist who, you know, is saying, no, this is a rent eviction, I'm not leaving, and it throws off the entire timeline because the building's no longer vacant, most operators cannot withstand a month or a year of a property vacant except for one tenant.
Yep.
There's tremendous risk in that, and most operators don't factor in, hey, what happens if everybody doesn't take the cash for keys and leave so that I can start the renovations and get things moving? And then we have, CMHC. They keep moving the goalposts. When people started renovation projects 2 years ago, they were not operating with CMHC with the same underwriting criteria as they're operating with right now. So the loan to values are coming in low. CMHC has moved the goalpost. Like, there's all these things happening. So you have to know, you need to at least understand the investment model before you take in all the other risks and all the other things that can happen that people have no control over.
Yep. I went to, I'll tell another story that isn't my story that I heard at a real estate meetup that one of the speakers was telling. And they bought an apartment complex of townhomes. I think it was in Guelph, Ontario. And so they're purchasing this property, and the rents were around $2,000 a month for each of the units, except for one. There was one unit sitting at like $750 a month. And when they were the broker and everyone who sold them on the deal told them, you know what, you can just pay them some cash for keys, give them 5 grand or 2 grand, and they'll be on their way. And then you can, do a quick reno because it's not in bad shape. And here's some pictures of the unit, and then you can move the rent up to the $2,000. Well, this tenant was well educated, and they understand valuing a property based on cap rate. They knew what the cap rate was for Guelph. And whenever they came in and said, I want to have, I don't remember the exact numbers, but they said, here's 2 grand to leave. And they responded with, I want $115,000 because that's what's going to do change the value of your property if you move me up to $2,000 a month. And they're like, what, $115,000 to leave? And they're like, yep, or we're never leaving. We're never leaving. We're at 750. You can bump our rent by the whatever it is every year, 2%, 1.8, whatever it's at, and you'll never catch up. So do you want to do this? So they kept them around for 2 years, and then they want to do the refinance, and they had to pay them $115,000 to leave to be able to do the refinance. And I was like, whoa, whoa.
Yeah. Okay, eight projects, that won't happen. And that one more project, then you'll be able to do the cash for keys, and then there'll be that one. How many people have planned for that? How many, prospective prospectuses or whatever, have you looked at, memorandums or whatever, have you looked at that factors in, having a well-educated tenant who fully understands the ins and outs of the numbers?
And they're getting more educated. These tenants are getting more educated. There's
Yeah.
a lot of people teaching
Massive risks.
stuff. Yep. So it is, you have to understand, and they have to, depending on what market you're in, and it's going to vary depending on if you're talking about Alberta, Ontario, even state to state. You're talking about Illinois versus Florida, totally different laws, right? Anyway, we're going down a crazy rabbit hole. Anyway, I think we've kind of covered this. If we're just going to talk about due diligence of private lending, I think a lot of this is protect yourself. At the same time, I do encourage you to do this. It isn't like don't do private lending, but do this correctly. Make sure you've secured your interest. Make sure you understand who you're investing with. I think that's the main points, right?
Yeah, I think the other thing I'd like to add, I have a client right now who is headed to arbitration for a syndicate for a GP LP structure. And one of the things that they've discovered is that the documents that were provided by the LP do, or by the GP do not protect the LP. They are very, very strongly in favor of the GP, to the point where it doesn't even stipulate in the documents that the down payment funds must be paid back before any profits can be distributed. So do not sign anything without going to a lawyer and having them look at it as well.
And I honestly would like to, if I'm when I'm investing in something like that, I'd like to see that the GPs are putting money in as well.
Yeah.
I with mine, I put money in. I keep money aside and I put money in as well because it also aligns my interest because I don't want to lose my money either, and I'm on the same boat. I could go down a whole thing about syndications. You should understand what they're paying, what the setup fees are. Sometimes like people get can charge like 3% in like setup fees so that they pull back like tons of money out of the project right on the closing date, right? As soon as
Yeah.
everyone gets funded. But you should know that as an investor, what they're doing with that, right? Like typically with me, I disclose that I'm like, this is what we paid for phase one, this is what we paid for this is what this, and this is what the the fee is going to be, it's not for me to get paid, it's for me to get paid back for parts that are of this project that have already been paid for. Right.
Yeah. And that's the way I look at it too. This whole thing around fees, I don't remember seeing that 15 years ago. Like 15 years ago, if you were putting together a syndication or something like that, like being able to do the deal and be part of the deal, that was part of the value that you brought. But now this, you know, I'm going to get paid back. It was just, and I see some of that, like people start, well, this is the acquisition fee or this is the finder's fee. And I'm like, but I thought that was your contribution.
Yeah. 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 And also just, like tax breaks, who gets the tax breaks? I've seen them, right? The depreciation goes all to the GP side. They've seen structures that do that way too. So that means you're going to pay more tax as a limited partner. Anyway, we can go down a rabbit hole and I haven't even really prepared notes, but there's lots of things to look at if you're doing a syndication or work with someone who's well-trusted and has a good reputation.
Yeah. But even if that's the case, then do your due diligence. And I think, you know, I'm not in any way trying to blame lenders. I know there are lenders or some lenders right now who are in tremendous distress. My heart really goes out to them, and know that you can still invest in real estate. You can still do it safely. There are still, you know, good people out there, and there are still opportunities to make money. Give up this idea of get rich quick. Give up the idea that you just, you know, throw your money blindly at a deal because the person has a good reputation. Create your, I call them rules of engagement. So create your rules of engagement. What must be present in every deal for you to be comfortable? What information do you need to have to be able to sign the paperwork and say, yes, I know what I need to know? And once you have those, don't deviate from them for anyone. If you have one of your rules of engagement is no more than $75,000 in any one deal, it doesn't matter who's asking to borrow the money. It's no more than $75,000. That's it. That's all.
That's actually a great tip too. We just didn't even touch on the whole time. Whenever I invest, if I'm like, hey, I just did some money, came into some money and I want to put it out, I want to split it up.
Yeah. You choose different markets, different investment models, and with different borrowers. Mm-hmm. And that's how you mitigate risk.
Yep. And if you don't get the answers, if they're not willing to give you the answers, there's lots of people that are looking for money. So move along.
And that's the crazy thing too, is that there's so much money right now that's gone missing, that there are a ton of borrowers out there going, I have good deals, I have good opportunities, but there's so much less money being lent right now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
It's noticeable.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Okay. Elizabeth, people wanted to get you to help them to look over their deal before they invested their money. They wanted to hear about the, you know, get on a list to, you know, get an email about what the summit is and when it is and how they sign up. How do they get a hold of you? How do they find all your stuff?
I'm not hard to find. You can find me on Instagram, on Facebook. I'm on TikTok, LinkedIn, but Elizabeth Kelly Consulting for Instagram is probably the fastest and easiest way to find me. And I keep everybody up to date. I post a couple of stories every day talking about different things. And I really feel a responsibility to make sure that people know and understand what they're signing up for in real estate. I love to help people get started. So reach out to me anytime.
Awesome. Well, thank you for coming on the show. I think this will help. This has got to help some people. Some people that they're going to look at this and they're going to see that they're not doing enough due diligence on these, on doing the private lending. I think a lot of people, it's going to open their eyes to that. Maybe they got lucky for a while, but you got to start doing this correctly. You know, treat it like a business, because otherwise you're going to get walked all over.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you, Glenn. I appreciate how much great information you put out there for free. And I know you're doing a fantastic job. I've watched you grow over the years, and congratulations on all of your success.
Thank you, Elizabeth. All right. I'll let you go. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was a nice video. Bye.